It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. A place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. Now, in the center of our service, in the center of our lives, let us make time for life's quiet sides. You may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. Mother's Day has been a national observance in this country on the second Sunday of May since 1914. And so it is Mother's Day. Let us give thanks for mothers, whether they gave birth to the children or adopted them, for mothers who have lost a child through miscarriage, abortion, adoption, or death, and who still feel that loss, for those who have never had children but who miss being mothers and who are mothers in their hearts, who express their nurture in other ways, for our own mothers and theirs as far back as our living memory will carry us, and for all who have lost their mothers and feel that loss today. It is Mother's Day. Let us remember all the varieties of mothers in all of our lives in gratitude and prayer. Amen. Mother's Day is one of these things that comes every year that preachers have to preach on every year and wonder how to come up with something new on something old. It's an annual ritual when we come with expectations of images and words of peace, life, gentleness, and a well-deserved recognition for the many mothers of all kinds whose job, we say, it is to embody those things. And we will not be happy if we don't hear those words. So you will. But it's worth wondering why we only give ourselves a couple days a year to do this. Christmas, Mother's Day, Easter, Valentine's Day. There aren't many days that we set aside to remind us of the gentler voices of the angels of our better nature. It's not that Mother's Days are new inventions. They're very old. In prehistory, the Greeks held annual festivals to honor Rhea, the mother of all the gods, and they honored Demeter, the great earth mother. Before them, the Babylonians, the Canaanites, honored Inanna. The great mother has been honored under so many names. Egyptians made pictures and statues of their goddess Isis holding her baby godson, Horus. And those pictures were used as the models for nearly identical pictures and statues of Mary holding her godson, Jesus, a few centuries later. In Hinduism, too, there are appeals to great mother goddess figures, though with that wonderful, rich, wild Hindu imagination. I found this short prayer to Mother Durga. Mother Durga is a many-armed symbol of many-faceted powers. May the all-compassionate mother be a welcome guest in our hearts. May she consent to carry us safely across the ocean of life to the shore of liberation. This could be a prayer to any of the great mothers in any religious tradition. The mothers of gods, the mothers of dreams, the mothers of life and hope. In Buddhism, the prayers are to Kuan Yin, the feminine counterpart of the Buddha. In Taoism, they're to Yin, the feminine principle associated with the moon and with becomings, the vulnerable but necessary counterpart to the kind of male force suggested by Yang. So these voices arise in all times and places, and they say much the same things. They plead for life, love, peace, compassion, understanding, comfort. They're all variations on one voice coming up from the depths of the human soul, a voice that pleads for compassion to balance combativeness, love to balance lust, generosity to counter greed, and the power to give life to balance the power to destroy life. All these are voices of mothers or mothering, of mothers' days, and they span all the times and places where humans have lived. But since that's so, why are they so rare? Why do they speak out so seldom? Why do we only have a few holidays a year when we're supposed to trot these voices out and listen to the sweet words of love and compassion before we get back to life as it's really carried on? In ancient Greece, the two gods who were in some ways the most opposite, Apollo and Dionysus, and I've always thought this was one of the more interesting things about the Greeks and their gods, shared the same temple. 9 months of the year, Apollo was worshipped there, and 3 months of the year, the wild Dionysus was worshipped there. I thought that makes more sense. Even 3 to 1 is better than nearly 100 to 1. We have only a few days a year to hear these voices, and these voices are like little blades of grass or fragile spring flowers that always have to break through the hard soil of hard attitudes. Attitudes of greed, lust, power, destruction, war, imperialism, domination, you can finish the list. That hard soil seems to be the ground of history, the ground on which are built all our tragedies, our battlefields, and our graveyards. That hard soil is made of the coarser and grittier, dirtier aspects of human nature. To become fully human, to become whole and balanced, we have to somehow educate those coarse voices the way we would educate a teenaged boy who thought only in terms of joining gangs or fantasizing about violence, domination, and war, which is a show you can watch kids playing in thousands of video games and half of the hit movies. We like to fool ourselves about this. We like to pretend that really, if you really understand human nature, we're really just, honest, and peace-loving people. And we seem to be more surprised when war breaks out than we are when peace breaks out, even though peace breaks out so much less often. It's a kind of anesthetic that can let us make war, enslave third world workers to make us cheap goods, and do all manner of unspeakable things that we insist have nothing to do with human nature. I want to honor the spirit of Mother's Day here by being blunt about the background noise, the hard soil that motherly spirits always have to break through. I think we forget at our peril that the reason that voices like those of Mother's Day need special occasions is because they're not the voices that run our world or write our history. These voices against arrogant or adolescent violence don't have to come from women. This isn't just a feminist thing. But they do come from that feminine part of us, whether you want to call it the feminine archetype or the yin. I think one of the most ancient and famous of these voices came from a man, the Athenian comic playwright Aristophanes. In 410 BC, he wrote his play Lysistrata, a play about a sex strike by the women that is to continue until their men stop playing war. Yin has arisen to confront Yang, to say, you may not go destroy life, then come to us to enjoy its sweet pleasures. If you would be served life at night, you must serve it in the daytime. That's the spirit of Mother's Day in one of its most ancient forms. It's saying that the feminine force, the power of yin, whatever you want to call it, can be just as powerful as the testosterone-soaked power of yang in a quieter, gentler, but ultimately more powerful way. Buddhism has a wonderful story about this. It's the same kind of voice. A story about power, the nature of real power. It's a story of a ferocious bandit who approached the Buddha one day and informed the Buddha in his huge macho voice that he was the most ferocious bandit in the world, and to prove his power he was going to kill the Buddha. "Ah, then," said the Buddha, "with all that power you can at least grant me two wishes." "Get on with it," said the bandit. "I have other people to kill." And the Buddha pointed to a little sapling tree a few feet over, and he said, cut off the smallest branch on that little tree." And the bandit laughed and flicked his sword, and the branch was off. And he said, "Now what's your last wish?" And the Buddha picked up the little teeny branch, and he handed it to the bandit and said, now put it back." Legend has it that the bandit achieved enlightenment in that instant, as he finally understood that the true meaning of power is to create life, not merely to destroy it. That's the message of all Mother's Days, in all times and places, that we need to remember that honorable power is the power that creates life, not the power that destroys it. The spirit of Mother's Day is always this spirit of yin, of the mother goddess, of the earth mother, of that first fierce determination of the gentler sex in Aristophanes' play, the overwhelming power of the Buddha's gentle wisdom, breaking through the hard soil of our everyday minds, the hard soil of human history, and, whether we like to admit it or not, of human nature. That's the background on almost every Mother's Day I've heard of. In England, they don't have our version of Hearts and Flowers Mother's Day. They have what they call a Mothering Day, which is in March. And it's a day, on the surface, it sounds like Hearts and Flowers. It's a day when children come home and bring their mothers flowers. Well, that's sweet. And it makes florists very happy. But the history of the day is darker and is more typical. It came from the 19th century, when the wealthy in England had bought and owned the government, had looted all the money they could get, and reduced most of the masses to starvation levels, much as we find in many countries around the world today. Girls often left home then at age 10 to go find full-time work to stay alive far from home. Mothering Day was the day when they were allowed to come home to remember what their mother looked like. So beneath the surface of Hearts and Flowers was a story of broken hearts and uprooted flowers. Our Mother's Day, our official one, which began with President Wilson's proclamation in 1914, is mostly a hearts and flowers thing, a day on which florists and restaurants make small fortunes, which is why they buy almost all the advertising to remind you that Mother's Day is coming. But the original Mother's Day wasn't hearts and flowers. That was the one you've already experienced in the responsive reading from this morning. That was a Mother's Day proclamation written by Julia Ward Howe in 1872. She was quite aware that hers was a voice fighting up through the hard soil of greed and destruction and war, a voice fighting up through the voices that define history to oppose them. I want to read you some of what Julia wrote about the origin of her Mother's Day proclamation from her memoirs so that you can understand the manger in which her Mother's Day was born. This is quite a powerful woman who also wrote well. I had felt a great opposition to Napoleon from the period of the infamous act of treachery and violence which made him emperor. As I was revolving these matters in my mind while the Franco-Prussian War was still in progress, I was visited by a sudden feeling of the cruel and unnecessary character of the contest. It seemed to me a return to barbarism, the issue having been one which might easily have been settled without bloodshed. The question forced itself upon me, why do not the mothers of mankind interfere in these matters to prevent the waste of that human life of which they alone bear and know the cost? I'd never thought of this before. The august dignity of motherhood and its terrible responsibilities now appeared to me in a new aspect, and I could think of no better way of expressing my sense of these than that of sending forth an appeal to womanhood throughout the world, which I then and there composed. The little document which I drew up in the heat of my enthusiasms implored women all the world over to awake to the knowledge of the sacred right vested in them as mothers to protect the human life which costs them so many pangs. I did not doubt but that my appeal would find a ready response in the hearts of great numbers of women throughout the limits of civilization. I invited these imagined helpers to assist me in calling and holding a Congress of Women in London, and at once began a wide task of correspondence for the realization of this plan. My first act was to have my appeal translated into various languages, to wit, French, Spanish, Italian, German, and Swedish, and to distribute copies of it as widely as possible. I devoted the next 2 years almost entirely to correspondence with leading women in various countries. I also had two important meetings in New York at which the cause of peace and the ability of women to promote it were earnestly presented. In the spring of 1872, Julia visited England, hoping by her personal presence to effect the holding of a women's peace conference there. She noted, though, as she put it, as she found just how hard the soil is through which voices like hers were trying to break, she noted that the ladies who spoke in public in those days mostly confined their labors to the advocacy of women's suffrage and were not much interested in my scheme of a worldwide protest of women against the cruelties of war. I don't think the spirit of Mother's Day can have its true meaning or power without understanding the background against which it's taking place. The nature of the hard crust that the voices are always trying to break through. Just like you can't understand yin without understanding yang. You can't understand a word like weak unless you understand what strong means, or light and dark, or any of the opposites. But we don't like to acknowledge that. And I want to look for a few minutes at some of the background of this Mother's Day and how similar it seems to be to the background of all Mother's Days. This week, we've seen and heard testimony from Donald Rumsfeld and others about the vicious and vulgar abuses of Iraqi prisoners of ours in Abu Ghraib prison. That was the infamous prison that Saddam Hussein used for years as his center of torture and murder. That's the prison we closed down and then reopened. After these stories began to break, comic John Stewart said on The Daily Show that it seemed that Abu Ghraib hadn't actually been closed, it was just under new management. You've seen or read about these vulgarities. a video showing American soldiers, including American women soldiers, giving laughing thumbs-up signs as Iraqi prisoners are stripped naked and forced into humiliating positions. You've read about the U.S. soldiers riding a 70-year-old Iraqi woman on all fours like a horse. These are despicable acts. Donald Rumsfeld, in what struck me as a disingenuous speech, characterized them as completely un-American. Unfortunately, they're completely American. Yesterday, for instance, the New York Times carried a short article claiming that physical and sexual abuse of prisoners, similar to what has been uncovered in Iraq, routinely takes place in American prisons with little public knowledge or concern. Some of the worst abuses, the article said, have occurred in Texas, whose prisons were under a federal consent decree during much of the time President Bush was governor because of crowding and violence by guards against inmates. Judge William Wayne Justice of Federal District Court, a man who sometimes attends this church and is worth getting to know, imposed the decree after finding that guards were allowing inmate gang leaders to buy and sell other inmates as slaves for sex. Yesterday's New York Times also pointed out that the men who directed the reopening of the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq last year and trained the guards there was a man who had resigned under pressure as director of the Utah Department of Corrections in 1997 after an inmate died while shackled to a restraining chair for 16 hours. The inmate, who suffered from schizophrenia, was kept naked the whole time. The Utah official, Lane McCotter, was handpicked by Attorney General John Ashcroft to rebuild Iraq's criminal justice system. These are not un-American activities. These are American activities, and they're despicable. The behavior we saw in the videos was distinctly characteristic behavior Americans practice and permit in our own prison systems right here. Let's wake up. And while this administration, just as the administrations before it, tries to claim that our methods of war are humane and noble, the high activities of peace and justice-loving people, this is no less a lie than it was 13 years ago in the first Gulf War or 35 years ago in the Vietnam War. Remember that all over the television stations before we invaded Iraq, and I think this is a story that you would not even have believed could have happened had it not happened. Our President, Secretary of Defense, and Secretary of State actually referred to the coming slaughter and invasion of Iraq, thousands of innocent Iraqi citizens, under the proud title of shock and awe. It wasn't wholesale murder during the invasion of a country whose oil and strategic position we had lusted after for 15 years, no. It was something exciting, like special effects from an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, shock and awe. No blood, no dismembered bodies, no deaths, no ruined lives, just something really exciting. Shock and awe. Imagine how whoever thought up that line might describe the vicious and vulgar tortures of Iraqi prisoners. But you don't have to imagine it. You can turn on Rush Limbaugh, who described them this past week as he laughed them off as being just like fraternity hazing and an understandable way for soldiers who need to let off steam. This is part of the background against which today's Mother's Day takes place. These are the violent voices that make up the hard soil that needs to be broken through. We need to claim the power to describe events more honestly in order to retain our own integrity and our own sense of sanity. These were vicious, vulgar, disgusting actions, but they were not un-American, nor were they subhuman. Humans are the only species that do things like this to one another. They were part of human nature. The bad part. That's the background against which Mother's Day comes. And the great tragedy of humanity is that the violent and vulgar behaviors write human history, while the truly noble and life-giving voices are relegated to occasional shouts from the back of the room and sparse annual holidays. And what's ironic about it is how badly it distorts the reality that's all around us that we get numbed to and don't see, because life is bursting up all around us. Life is the great force whose side we should be taking, not its destruction. We are surrounded, embraced, cradled in the great power of life, even here. This week, while thinking about this sermon, I've been thinking of some of these things, and I felt positively engulfed by life. Let me share some of them with you. Our last year's intern, Kathy Harrington, is preaching her final candidating sermon this morning up in Ludington, Michigan. I read her draft of it Friday. It's a Mother's Day sermon, drawing a lot on her own experience as a single mother who raised three kids and sent them all through college. I served 7 years ago the church that she's being called to this morning as a half-time interim. And the other church I served that same time, 7 years ago, also as a half-time interim, also called their new minister last week, a woman I've talked with on the phone several times during all this. And life is bursting through her there too. Her Jill, her name is. Jill's contract begins August 1st, but she doesn't begin until November 1st. Why? Because she's expecting her first baby in August, and she's beginning her ministry on paid maternity leave. Hannah Wells, this year's intern, is a 30-year-old woman looking forward to marriage and to having children, and sometimes she talks about it in our weekly private meetings. She's bursting to burst forth. Betty Squarick, our director of religious education, told me that last Sunday here in this church, we had 39 kids in the pre-kindergarten class. 39 kids age 4 and 5. You don't think life is bursting up all around us? God, it's everywhere. And it's wonderful. That's why the voices of Mother's Day and the spirit of Mother's Day is such an important spirit to honor. Not only today, but every day. These are the voices of life and love and compassion and nurture, the voices we're most proud of, the voices of the angels of our better nature, without which we cease to exist as healthy, mature people. Well, we can't fix history today. We can't change the hard soil, or the fact that gentle voices of life and love and compassion will always have to struggle to fight their way through it. The forces that write history will continue to be the forces mostly of yang, not yin, because yang has guns and owns politicians and makes the laws and lusts after domination. But we can try to give a little recognition to the voices of yin, the voices of mothers, past, present, and future, the voices of the gentler wisdom, the angels of our better nature. And we can try to recognize the people who are doing their best to serve life, add love, and bring compassion to the world. And that, truth be told, includes most of us. It's Mother's Day. Let us give thanks for all the many kinds of mothers there are among us. Let us give thanks for that spirit of mothers and mothering. That spirit knows that the real power is the power to give life, not the power to destroy or demean it. Let us give thanks that these gentle voices of the angels of our better nature do speak up, at least on these few days of the year we have allowed them. For when we listen to them, they have the power of making us all better people, better partners, better parents, and better citizens. making us all more whole and more holy, and a credit to ourselves, our species, and to life itself. Let us be raised to those higher aspirations today and show it in higher behavior. And let us not forget that what we are capable of sometimes, we can also rise to more times, if only we will. It is Mother's Day, a day which holds sacred the tender mercies of all our hearts. Let us give thanks.